Okay, welcome. This is a Creative Disturbance podcast and under the Adventures of Crowdfunding. And I'm David Marlatt, the Executive Director of the National Crowdfunding Association. And I work with the University of Texas at Dallas and the students and faculty there with some of their crowdfunding projects. And I'm real pleased to be talking to Michael Melfi today. Michael, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. Can you introduce yourself briefly before we kind of get into our conversation today?
Absolutely. My name is Michael Melfi. I'm an intellectual property attorney and a digital entrepreneur. And over the course of the last few years, I've become more deeply entrenched in the crowdfunding space. Most recently writing a book on crowdfunding called The Simple Secrets of Crowdfunding. And I also am the general counsel of a crowdfunding portal called Funderbilt.
Yeah, okay. And you and I have known each other for a little while, really since, April 2012, back in the passage of the Jobs Act and the beginning of some of the dream of equity crowdfunding in America. And we both have seen it kind of come and flatline a bit. What are your feelings on where we stand today with equity crowdfunding? And maybe first to sort of define for the listeners who aren't real sure what equity crowdfunding is.
Sure. So equity crowdfunding is basically the idea that you can crowdfund your fundraising for your business through security. So what I mean by that is that an individual or business or organization can put together a project where they can go out to the mass market or the general public and solicit or market promote that they are looking to raise money for their business, and they can ultimately raise that money through what would be considered a security to raise money ultimately to use in their business, at which point they would be taking on some form of investor into their business.
So it's traditional crowdfunding, and I'm just going to assume our listeners know what basic crowdfunding is. But yeah. In addition to the perks or rewards or pre-sale of the product or whatever it may have you, they're getting some form of security in the underlying company or project.
Yeah, they're basically becoming, I'm going to use kind of layman's terms, but they're becoming an investor in the business to an extent in some regard. I mean, for, you know, technically they're subscribing to a security typically, or and they're making some type of investment into the security of the entity that's making the offering.
Yeah. You know, the Oculus Rift is a good example, I think, and I think, you know, a lot of people are familiar with that. You know, that Palmer Luckey, I think it's his last name. Maybe I don't have his name correctly. Who did I think he was looking for $250,000 and raised $2.5 million on Kickstarter. And then, of course, 18 months later, sold it all for $2 billion to Facebook. And there was a lot of question at the time of, you know, right after the sale of, wow, had I gotten just a little bit of equity in that? Instead of just the first developer's kit, which is already obsolete, amazing return they would have had. And, you know, I tell people a lot, and I'm just curious as your opinion that, you know, once equity really does finally kick in here in the United States, it's going to be a lot different. You're going to almost, especially for tech projects, you're almost going to have to offer it because people are going to be saying, well, what if? What if this actually hits big? I want to have that opportunity. Do you feel the same?
I think there's two, I do, but I would say there's a caveat. There's really two audiences that you're looking at. There's still someone who generally just wants that technology reward. Maybe they don't invest. They don't have the money to invest. They're just not programmed like that. Maybe they don't do that. Maybe they'd rather put their money somewhere else, and they really just want whatever is being sold. So whether it be the Lockatron or the Tile or the Oculus or whatever other technology item that's being sold, you know, like the recent one was that the coolest cooler, right? And right. So everyone wanted the cooler, but you know, there's always some product that there's people that just want that product.
You don't think there's going to be some pressure in, for example, in the Oculus situation where people say, you know, what if this gets bought out? What if this device gets picked up? What if? I don't want to be left in the, you know, they're not going to be looking for a, you know, almost like an oil royalty, a 0.0005% interest.
Yeah, I just think the mindset of the funder, we call them funders, but the mindset of the funder is different. Someone who's looking for instant gratification, that reward, is different than the person who's saying, I see this as a potential investment. Because your emotional set by which you make that choice is very different. Mm. You know, someone's buying the Oculus because they specifically want something. The person who's looking for that financial reward is probably more of an investor, maybe day trades, maybe just, you know, likes the technology world and would like to invest. And I think what I'm hoping, you know, with some of the options will be is that you can do both. So you wouldn't necessarily be running two campaigns, but it almost would be part of the campaign is just pre-sales of the product, right? And the second one is your actual investment or equity offering. And again, that hasn't been defined yet, but I do see it being an opportunity.
I see that in the film industry too happening where people take, I keep going back to the petroleum business where people are, you know, it's more of a, you know, when you say a security and people think of stocks, well, what kind of stock are you going to get for $300? But it's, to me, it makes more sense when you think of like royalties where you've got some micro percent and it's kind of kept in that form. But now let's talk a little bit about Funderbilt. You guys,
sure.
Is this a client of yours? Just something that you're actively involved in?
Yeah, so Funderbilt brought me on as the general counsel, and it's been an exciting ride. We got to launch, you know, Funderbilt was really created by a group of entrepreneurs looking to empower other entrepreneurs. And when I use the word entrepreneurs, that comes in the form of people looking for investments, people looking for donations, people looking for funding for their causes.
Let me pause you a minute. You know, as you and I know, we've talked plenty of times, and you know I've seen a whole lot of, and you have too, crowdfunding sites. And so I'm not, you know, blowing wind up your skirt when I say you guys have got one of the prettiest, for lack of a better word, and most, you know, just elegant sites I guess I've just about ever seen. So kudos for that. I hope great success. Go ahead.
I really appreciate that. You know, that probably leads me into kind of what was, when, you know, obviously you and I have been here since this was kind of in created, right? And yeah. I've really watched what I feel works and doesn't work. And kind of most of my career, I've liked to be involved with things that were a little disruptive or different. And so, you know, I think the industry in itself is. And then I also saw that there's a lot of really great things that companies are doing. There's a lot of things that people could potentially improve upon. And so when they asked me my opinion as their general counsel, I gave them some ideas of how I thought they could really set themselves apart and make some differences. One of just being the design and functionality and the ease of use.
So I believe they achieved that. They didn't take any of your advice, and that's why they look so good?
That's exactly it. They didn't take any of my advice.
So now you guys are going to do both equity and, you know, across the board types of crowdfunding, equity as soon as you can. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. So, you know, as we know, that the Jobs Act currently isn't defined, you know, what exactly can be done. What is legal is that public solicitation to accredited investors under the Regulation D, which is what, you know, kind of most people are defining as equity.
Right.
And then we also do donation and reward under the traditional crowdfunding models.
Now, you know, one of the problems, and I don't mean to put you quite on the spot on this, but I guess I do. One of the difficulties just of having a non-Kickstarter, non-Indiegogo brand is how in the hell do you get people to come put stuff on your site when, the logic would say, and I'm not trying to promote against your site, it's a real question. When the logic says I should be on Kickstarter because that's where all the eyeballs are.
Absolutely. It's a great question. And I would agree, if you have a project that gets to be a staff pick or you get a project that has a ton of traction, being on Kickstarter is going to be people that just come to your project and potentially would just fund it, whether it be the Kickstarters of the world, the GoFundMes, the Fundables. I mean, they all do a great job at what they're doing. I happen to believe that we've created a unique niche in what we're doing. I also know that we're in an industry that's growing. And so, for someone who's going to potentially be on one of the bigger sites, they may get kind of lost in the shuffle. Right. And when you start to find companies that are out there offering you know, some differentiating factors. You know, so if you look at what we're doing is that where most platforms take some type of percentage of the money raised, we take a flat fee. And that flat fee, you know, is a little bit different in that sense. You know, I was speaking with a registered about a I'm sorry?
I said, oh, I'd forgotten about that you guys do a flat fee.
Yeah, so if you look at, you know, I was just sitting with a group today, and they're like, so it was a pretty big organization. They said, so, you know, if we sell 50,000 of our units, how much are you going to charge us? I'm like, $250. They're like, well, what if we sell $1 million? I go, $250. It's just a flat fee we have, you know, that we're going out there with. And it's been, you know, it seems to be pretty well received, because what people are really getting is the support they need to be successful. You know, when we set it up, it was about what does it take to be simply successful? How do we find serious people who want success in crowdfunding? And those people care about where their dollars are going. And so now we're not going to take away from that. I think the other thing, as you know, with just my background in digital marketing, the legal aspects, some of the financial aspects of what we do, our online marketing kind of background, we've been able to couple that all together and put together a really good toolbox. And that toolbox is meant to kind of be a personal trainer to the crowdfunding person, so that it's not this kind of like vast nebulous of they don't know where to go. We literally take them through day by day what needs to be done. And if someone is, you know, a good idea and good people that are passionate and dedicated that follow our system, have a likelihood of success.
You know, the number one, I know you do, and I give counsel almost, you know, not daily, but a whole lot. Especially with students that I'm talking to now, you know, the number one issue is social media. It is the reach. Everybody can build not everybody, but a lot of people can build great videos. A lot of people can do all the other elements. But the social media reach, is there anything you guys, where do you think that to me is the holy grail. If a portal can somehow bring that or help in that regard, what do you guys do to help in that regard?
Yeah, so that's as you know, my background has a lot to do with social media and digital marketing. And while there's no secret recipe, I can't click a secret button and all of a sudden have people start funding.
No? You can't?
No, I can't yet. I've been working on it. I do have a magic wand, and it hasn't made it happen yet. And we're testing some pills, but it's not there yet. But what we can do is that we do understand the strategies necessary to produce successful digital marketing campaigns.
Yeah.
And we also understand what it takes to produce successful fundraising campaigns. And we also understand the communication and branding and messaging needed to produce fundraising results. And when you marry all those two together, three of those together, excuse me, what you have is you have a recipe for success.
Yeah.
And like I said, it may not be guaranteed. If someone who comes in and follows our process day by day, each day I'm going to give them a half hour to hour worth of work that's going to produce results.
Right. You know, I really appreciate your time, Michael, and I know we're running short on time now. Tell me a bit again, tell us again about the book that you've just finished.
Sure. I recently just finished a book called The Simple Secrets of Crowdfunding, and it's available on Amazon and Kindle.
Cool.
And really, the audience was set up to be It really serves two people. Those people who just really want to better understand crowdfunding, the history of crowdfunding, what it is, how it works. And then I actually take the second part of the book to really explain what it takes to be successful with your crowdfunding.
Okay. Well, listen, this has been great, Michael. And I hope as we continue to go, you know, this disturbance on Creative Disturbance is called The Adventures in Crowdfunding. We're going to be doing a lot of interviewing with different people who've had some success in crowdfunding, and I hope that you'll come back and visit with us some more.
I would love to, and I appreciate the opportunity today.
All right. Thanks, Michael. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.